Happy Hanukkah to those of you who are observing. Tonight is the first night of Hanukkah. It is the... let us pause for a moment for a little bit of... you know, I hate religion. You know, I really do. I can't stand it. But in fairness, since I criticize Christianity so much, and I usually try to get Islam and Judaism and occasionally Hinduism too. But this is Hanukkah is the Hebrew word for dedication or consecration, and it marks the rededication of the temple in Jerusalem after its desecration by the forces of the king of Syria. And it commemorates the miracle of the container of oil. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was such a thing, the miracle of the container of oil. According to the Talmud, at the rededication following the victory of the Maccabees over the Syrians, there was only enough consecrated olive oil to fuel the eternal flame in the temple for one day, and miraculously the oil burned for eight, which was the length of time it took to press, prepare, and consecrate fresh olive oil. Happy Hanukkah to those who are observing that particular holiday. And before we get into the really gruesome, gory, bloody crap that we usually get into on this twisted radio program, I got this little bit from Jude earlier today. There's word from some scientists. Jude lives in Seattle. She's the woman who has the website and the organization Women Standing, womenstanding.org, I believe, or .com, one of the two. It's an anti-war group, peace group based in Seattle. Anyway, she sent this to me. There is word from some scientists today that there may be three times more stars in the universe than was previously thought, and of course many, many planets that could support life. I think one of the most arrogant characteristics of human beings is their inability to immediately accept the idea that there is life on other planets, millions of planets containing life. Of course, this is in keeping with the religious stuff. You know, because if you acknowledge other life on other planets, then all of a sudden the creation story accepted by Christians, Jews, and Muslims becomes caca. If these scientists are right, it means as many as 300 sextillion. Do you know what that number is? That is 3 followed by 23 zeros. 300, no, it has nothing to do with sex, all right? 300 sextillion stars. And if there are that many stars in the universe, let's see, octillion, septillion, sextillion is right up there. There's not too much more. You have to go into logarithms to get too much higher than that. But then there's octillion, nonillion, decillion. But when you get up around that number, that's not a number that you and I can even conceive of. But the research is led by Yale astronomer Pieter van Dokkum. It's being published in the journal Nature. And the findings apparently are based on data gathered when the researchers were analyzing red dwarfs. Those are stars that are dimmer than our sun and much smaller, and they've been around for much longer. Most red dwarfs are around 10 billion years old. So based on whatever they base this stuff on, it simply means that there could be countless moments of Hanukkah or Christmas or a Muslim holiday. I'm sorry, one does not come to mind immediately. Don't send me a list of them or something to do with... you understand what I'm saying? Eid. That's right. Thank you. Eid. Billions, sextillion. It goes like this. Thousand, million, billion, trillion, quadrillion, quintillion, septillion, sextillion, octillion, nonillion, decillion. This Friday, the United States military will have been fighting in Afghanistan for as long as the Soviet military did in their attempt to build up a socialist state, by their definition, socialism. They couldn't win in Afghanistan, the Soviets couldn't, and now we are about to have something in common with that futile campaign. 9 years and 50 days is coming. So this Friday will be the anniversary. So by Saturday, we will have exceeded the insanity of the Soviet Union. And look what happened to them, huh? What Soviet Union, you may ask? And also this. This comes from someplace on the net, written by Scott Galindis. I forget where I got this. But there was a major drug bust on the border, on the Mexican border, the other day. It's a major coup for the Border Patrol's war on drug smuggling. I'm not trying to be funny here. Authorities seized 6 ounces of marijuana and detained notorious pot-smoking outlaw Willie Nelson. Nelson was detained after a Border Patrol officer heroically boarded Nelson's tour bus after detecting a pungent scent in the air coming out of the windows of Willie Nelson's bus. U.S. Border Patrol spokesman Bill Brooks said Nelson's tour bus was stopped at a checkpoint in Sierra Blanca, Texas, at about 9 a.m. on Friday. So if you're a serious pot smoker, 9 a.m., 9 p.m., doesn't matter. He said an officer smelled pot when a door was opened and a search turned up 6 ounces of marijuana. The Border Patrol spokesman said Willie Nelson was among 3 people arrested. Reportedly, Nelson and his crew of outlaws were on their way to Austin following a gig in California. The arrest did not take place on the border, but at a checkpoint well inside the United States. So we have these checkpoints now. You didn't know that? Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. You're driving along in your bus, your van, your car, your roller skates. You can be checked. Who was it that said it was a tweet someplace? They arrested Willie Nelson for weed. That's like arresting Santa for breaking and entering. all things considered, someone else tweeted, Willie Nelson should have a federal issue, a no-limit marijuana license. End of the story. Anyway, he was released after posting bail in the amount of $2,500. Willie Nelson. How old is he now? He's in his 70s, isn't he? That's why he can continue to sing. We have, I'm going to contribute a little bit here, my little bit, to a story that has been all over the place today. As if it were some, earth-shattering, breaking news event. Just, you couldn't turn on television today. I couldn't get in the car and listen to Sirius on my car radio without flipping through the channels to the various news stations on Sirius and not hear this story being breathlessly reported by everybody and their Aunt Charlie. So when we come back from this break, I'll tell you what the story is. Maybe you know already. But this is another example of the insanity and the uselessness and the idiocy of mainstream media in this country, as if you needed another example, right? We'll be right back. Stay with us.
truth seekers, gather around the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Okay, so this big... This hour is sponsored by Na Nguyen. I'm sorry I didn't mention it earlier. That's it. No message. Just the sponsor of this first hour of the program tonight is Na, N-H-A, Nguyen, Vietnamese. Thank you, Na. I appreciate it. And thanks for reminding me there, Catherine. All right, the big story, the big-ass story, the story that every single, and no, it's not the storm system that moved through the south here and sent tornadoes scattering all over Atlanta, which is one of the reasons we weren't on last night before. That was pretty devastating, it really was, and scary. But the big story is... Senate Republicans plan to block debate on virtually all Democratic-backed legislation that is not related to tax cuts for the wealthy. These petulant little bastards sent a letter to Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid today, informing him that the Republicans are going to sit with their thumbs in their mouths and block everything that the Democrats might come up with between now and the end of the year. And media in this country treated that as news? You dumb bastards, where have you been for 2 years? That's all they've done. That's all the Republicans have done, is block everything. So now because this... twit Mitch McConnell and Boehner, I'm sure he had his hands on this, so to speak. But now that this letter has gone from McConnell to Harry Reid, so what? What's new? What's different? This is not news. But there it was, all over the news today. Oh, my God, did you hear? No, what? Oh, well, the Republicans in the Senate are going to block everything unless it has to do with tax cuts for the wealthy. They are going to stick their thumbs in their mouths or their thumbs in one of their body openings, and maybe they'll play a game of Switch later on in the day. You know how that goes. Remember when you were a kid in the playground, you used to talk about playing Switch? How do you play that? Stick one thumb in your mouth and the other in some other body orifice, and then Switch! That's the level that the Senate Republicans are at. That's it exactly. Like playground, snot-nose, 10-year-olds. No offense to real 10-year-olds, but you know what I'm saying. So immediately, CNN, Fox, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, NBC, all over the internet. Oh, oh, oh! Did you hear the Republicans are going to do? You talk about a non-news story. Where have media been for the past 2 years when every single piece of legislation, everything, has been blocked or filibustered or whatever the terms are. I don't know what the terms are. I really don't care. I'm so sick of these rat bastards, and we have 2 more years to deal with them. So that was the big story today, that unless these whining, sniveling trolls... the Republicans, not one among the 42 in the Senate has any independence at all. Each one of these trolls is owned outright by capitalist corporate America. They are little automatons who do exactly what they're told to do. And if one of them steps out of line, capitalist corporate America unleashes Rush Limbaugh on that hapless senator's ass, and he immediately gets back in line. Immediately. All Limbaugh has to do is go on his radio program, make fart noises, and pretend like he's going to discipline this member of the Senate, and the member of the Senate immediately retreats, retracts, and figures out some way to get back into the good graces of the pig man. What a breaking news story. All they did today was put it in writing. In the meantime, the hundreds of thousands and soon to be millions of Americans who rely on unemployment comp are going to have it snatched away by the Republicans. And you know what I say? I say to the people who voted Republican in this last election, this is what you voted for. Suck it up. Live with it. You're dead meat. You voted for the wrong group. You voted for the worst of two evils. So don't complain. Don't bitch. No, don't moan. All the money you have left is now going to disappear. We'll be right back.
Statements, exaggerate the truth. I can't believe they hate my show. Inspires. It's not just because they're stupid. It's not just because they're scum. It's just because Republicans are liars. I am heartless. I am vain, insensitive, insane. They say that I'm a national disgrace. I am nasty.
One flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
Yes, it is. 25 before the hour. This hour brought to you by Na Nguyen. Na Nguyen, who is the sponsor of this hour. Thank you, Mr. Nguyen. I appreciate it very much. We'll get to the WikiLeaks. As far as the WikiLeaks story is concerned, all I can think about today is run, Julian, run. He's really become a target because word leaked out, and I may talk about this a little bit later, word leaked out that Julian Assange's next target is Bank of America. And apparently he has a hard drive, was delivered to him from one of the executives at Bank of America during the height of this massive fraud perpetrated by these voracious capitalist pig bastards during the reign of terror with Bush Cheney. So, you know, it's one thing to embarrass governments and state departments and foreign ministries. It's something else again to start messing around with corporate capitalist America. You do that, and he's a dead man. Interpol, this trumped up sex charge against him. Of course, it's a sex charge. Of course, it would either be the charge of sex or a charge of drugs. So they came down on the side of sex, rape, molestation, whatever the hell it is. Of course. Absolutely. What did you expect? I'll get to that a little bit later. At Raw Story, House Republicans have decided... Well, one House Republican, some freak named Rob Bishop, a Republican from, of course, Utah, introduced today a proposed amendment to the Constitution that would allow states to veto federal legislation. You hear that? Okay, now I've been talking for quite some time about the ultimate goal of the teabag Republican, crazy, religious, psychopathic bastards like this Rob Bishop the legislative branch of government in this country is to change it from the United States of America to the Federated States of America, kind of like the old Soviet Union or the new Russian Federation or something out of Star Wars. But this is the first shot across the bow to do this. A proposed amendment of the Constitution will allow states to veto federal legislation. You, of course, understand what that means. I hear your minds clicking over here a mile a minute. If they are able to veto federal legislation, then they are also would be able to ignore Supreme Court decisions. You understand what this means, of course. But as far as federal legislation is concerned, that means the states would not have to honor civil rights laws or human rights laws. This is how sick these son of a bitches have become. This is how they feel. You know, this on the heels today also of this, oh, memo, oh, we're going to block everything until the people who own us, the rich capitalists, get their tax break permanentized. And then this. It's referred to as the repeal amendment. And according to Raw Story, it would drastically change how the United States government operates by giving states the authority to repeal any federal legislation that two-thirds of the states agreed to repeal. And this nutcase, this psychopath, this Rob Bishop from Utah said, quote, I'm proud to sponsor the repeal amendment in Congress because it is a simple, transparent tool that can help restore balance and reduce the concentration of power in Washington. This is how these people talk. He went on to say, while the repeal amendment will not immediately turn the tide of a power-hungry, overreaching national government, it is an arrow in the quiver of states and a solid first step that can be taken to begin restoring the balance of power our founding fathers intended when they drafted the Constitution, end quote. I must have missed that part when the Constitution was drafted. The things I've read, somehow I missed that in order to restore what the founding fathers want, states must have the authority to repeal any federal legislation that they don't like. I don't know. I'm not saying it's not there. I said, I guess I missed it. Of course, the chances of this passing are slim and none. But Utah, being one of those states that vomits up onto the national political stage every now and again, some freak like this dumb bastard, Representative Rob Bishop, who's decided he's going to be the one to change it from United States of America to Federated States of America. And in his section, of course, the official religion, I'm sure, will be Mormonism. Proponents of the repeal amendment say they have growing support from those opposed to the health care overhaul. Representative Bishop said, quote, it's not necessarily about health care, but you can see why we're talking about it. No, you have to be mad. You have to be insane, Rob, to see why you're talking about it. He went on to say, Eric Cantor jumped on this train as quick as he could find some place to hold on. And he says, the repeal amendment would provide a check on the ever-expanding federal government, protect against congressional overreach, and get the government working for the people again, not the other way around. In order to return America to opportunity, responsibility, and success, we must reverse course. And the repeal amendment is a step in that direction, end quote. See, you don't need a repeal amendment. The way it's set up right now, states can contest federal legislation by bringing a constitutional challenge to federal court. That's all you have to do. And someone named Marianne Moran, M-O-R-A-N, that figures, she is the executive director of repealamendment.org. She said, quote, it just restores the balance of government between the states and the federal government as the founding fathers had originally intended. The website claims the amendment is dedicated to restoring our nation's economic liberty. And the repeal amendment is not the only Republican effort to alter the Constitution. Now, these are the same filthy, disgusting bastards who, during the campaign earlier this year, talked about the Constitution, the Constitution, the Constitution. And now they want to completely gut it and destroy it. Why, of course. This is not the only Republican effort to alter the Constitution. Ending citizenship rights granted to children of illegal immigrants born in the U.S. will be one of the first objectives of the Republican-led House, according to a published report. Representative Steve King, another freak bastard, this Republican is from Iowa, says he will push a bill to deny birthright citizenship to children of illegal immigrants. What else are they going to attempt to do? He says, Representative Steve King of Iowa said, because the 14th Amendment has been misconstrued, current law inappropriately gives American citizenship to the children of illegal aliens solely because their parents were able to cross our borders illegally and give birth here. In an open letter, however, Dede Blasey, the founder of Somos Republicans, criticized King for planning legislation, quote, that would undermine the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, which he swore an oath to uphold, end quote. These are Republicans, Ms. Blasey. These are Republicans. They don't give a goddamn about the Constitution. It is, as George Bush to them described it, a goddamn piece of paper. It means nothing. They mention the Constitution in their political campaigns in order to stir up the already terminally ignorant freaks who vote for them. The Constitution means nothing to a Republican. Nothing. Absolutely zero. I don't know. I've got something here that Cortland Malloy, no relation, wrote. He's a columnist for the Washington Post. Something he wrote about Obama today, which I think is very well done. I don't know if I'm going to mention this or not. I'll think about it during the break. We're going to take a break here? Okay, we'll take a break, and your humble and obedient servant here will decide whether or not I'm going to quote from Cortland Malloy's column from yesterday, I believe. Stay with us, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour. Yeah, I'm going to... Cortland Malloy is the Washington Post columnist, and he's writing about Obama walking back to the White House with his busted lip from that recent basketball game. And Cortland Malloy, who happens to be African-American, was saying he was hoping that Obama... Well, this is what he says. Cortland Malloy says, "Man up, Obama. Let us see you with blood on your teeth and fire in your eyes. Or does being the first black president mean you can never show yourself to be a man in full? Now he wants a pay freeze for federal employees, announced just in time for Christmas, only 2 months after proposing to give them a modest raise. Did the Republican leadership pop him in the mouth, too? Obama's decision will be a devastating blow to the Washington area's economy, not to mention a betrayal of some of his most loyal supporters and the nation's most dedicated public servants. After throwing nearly $1 trillion to rescue banks and big business, he turns around and picks the pocket of everyday working people? Has there ever been a president who treated his sworn enemies so much better than his proven friends? What a milquetoast. Cortland Malloy goes on, it's been 2 years since Obama's election, and that's how he always looks in the face of bad news. Never angry, never disgusted or fed up. During the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, he actually issued a news release that cited the emotions that he intended to convey during an upcoming speech. Anger and frustration! And he still came across as merely not pleased. And then Cortland Malloy says something that, you know, a white columnist wouldn't be comfortable saying, I don't think. Cortland Malloy says, by most accounts, Obama acts like a black man behind closed doors. He talks trash while shooting hoops. He talks Chicago South Side tough with his aides and conveys a range of emotions, including anger. Once in public, though, he demurs, as if upholding some unspoken bargain with white America to never look like an angry black man in exchange for continued off-the-charts likability ratings and a shot at re-election in 2012. Malloy goes on, it's bad enough that there are so few black men in public life who can be thought of as feared and respected, except for athletes such as, say, LeBron James. But for a black president to apparently choose to be the great placator is downright embarrassing. Maureen Dowd of the New York Times calls Obama a 46-year-old virgin. The Post's Kathleen Parker says he acts like the nation's first female president. Now, you know it's bad when a white woman tag team can play the dozens with the black man and score unanswered points left and right. I'm sure a lot of you white people who listen to this program don't know what playing the dozens is. But if you don't, I don't know. Does Wikipedia have it? I don't know. You can look it up. On Monday, Obama's manhood took three more hits in the headlines from the Post. E.J. Dionne, quote, does Obama have it in him to respond to critics, end quote. From the Post's Mark Thiessen, quote, Obama administration is weak in the face of WikiLeaks, end quote. And from the Huffington Post, Robert Kuttner, backbone, please. Much of this criticism, Cortland Malloy writes, against Obama has to do with his resolve, not his race. But I see the president as a black man first. It's a pride thing. Obama's victory wasn't just about his progressive platform. It was an historic racial barrier-busting victory that was supposed to make it just a little easier for black boys to imagine being president. But Obama is proving himself to be a mostly peculiar commander-in-chief. Maybe another black boy will someday grow up to become president. But if he turns out to be like Obama, it'll be hard to call him a black man. Ooh. Ooh, that's rough. That's some rough stuff. That's some rough stuff. And I'll tell you, Mr. Obama has brought this on himself. He really has. I mean, everybody, you expect Republican trolls and these dumb bastards on the political right to go after him, even though Obama is doing so many things for the corporate capitalists wealthy in this country that they should be celebrating his ascendancy and pretending like they're all real thrilled because an African-American finally made it to the presidency. But that's not what they're doing, because Obama is not quite fascist enough. You know, he's center right. And center-right government is not what the capitalists want. They want pure fascism. That's the best kind of government. It's the most profitable kind of government. It is the most manageable kind of government. Democracy is a pain in the ass. How many times have you seen this happen? Capitalist America will move into a country that's struggling with democracy, and the first thing we do is destroy the nascent democracy movement and replace it with militarism, replace it with fascism. We do this all the time. Look in our own hemisphere. That's all we've ever done in this hemisphere. That's all we've tried to do other places when we have butted our big, nasty capitalist asses into other people's countries and other people's businesses in order to steal everything that they have. We don't like democracy. Capitalism doesn't like democracy. Capitalism hates it. Now, I know that's not what you were taught in school. That's too damn bad. What you were taught in school was a lie. Capitalism loves fascism. They are peanut butter and jelly. They are hand in glove. They are ham and eggs. They go together perfectly. That's a perfect match. And Obama, being the get-along, go-along, center-right leader that he is just having his ass handed to him over and over again. And he's not going to be reelected in 2012. That's not going to happen unless something totally unforeseen develops. So I don't understand why he doesn't follow my advice and give his middle finger to everybody in the political establishment and say, yeah, I'm going to be a one-term president, and it's going to be one of the most kick-ass terms ever. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malone. Sponsored by Andrew Smith, who writes, thanks for keeping us in reality, Mike. Do you think the GOP may need to plan a field trip to the desert? I would like to see them plan a field trip to the deepest part of the ocean. Anyway, Andrew Smith, thank you, is the sponsor of this particular hour. I don't know if Barack Obama is ever going to, as Courtland Malloy says, man up. I have no idea. And frankly, I'm at the point now where I just really don't care. I just really don't care. He's had ample opportunity, and I understand the cultural restrictions on him, or he thinks they're on him, because he is a person of color in this country. A black man is not supposed to show any kind of emotion that would scare all the white people, you know, make them all wet their pants and run into the nearest 7-Eleven and start calling the police. But once he became president, and don't forget, you know, he's not really an exclusively black person or person of color as it's defined in this country. His mom was white. His dad was not white. Ooh! But you see, white people issued a rule in this country decades ago, generations ago, the one drop rule that simply says if you have one drop of Negro blood, you are one. I just wish that some of these people would show me the difference. But oh, never mind. What the hell? There's no point in it. Forget it. But he is doomed politically. I mean, it's pretty much all over. I got an email from Prairie 2, from Bruce, that said on Tom Hartman's program today, Tom was mentioning the fact that Obama has not opened a re-election office yet, something that he should have done 2 years ago. So as Prairie 2 says, I don't know if Hartman said this or if Bruce said it, but either that shows that Obama is incompetent or he has no plans to run for a second term. I don't know. Glenn Greenwood at Salon today quoted Time Magazine's Joe Klein, who I think is just a class A schmuck. I have no use for Joe Klein. What an apologist for everything that's wrong in American society. I mean, Joe Klein, he is capitalism's butt boy if ever one existed. But anyway, Joe Klein had this to say about the WikiLeaks disclosures, quote, "I am tremendously concerned about the puerile eruptions of Julian Assange. If a single foreign national is rounded up and put in jail because of a leaked cable, this entire anarchic exercise in freedom, quote, quote, stands as a human disaster. Assange is a criminal. He's the one who should be put in jail." That's what Joe Klein said. And then Glenn Greenwood says, "Do you have the principle down? It's, if a single foreign national is rounded up and put in jail because of the WikiLeaks disclosure, even a single one, then the entire WikiLeaks enterprise is proven to be a disaster, and Assange is a criminal and one who should be in jail. That's quite a rigorous moral standard." So as Glenn says, let's apply it elsewhere. What about the most destructive anarchic exercise in freedom the planet has known for at least a generation, the human disaster known as the attack on Iraq, which Joe Klein supported? That didn't result in the imprisonment of a single foreign national, but rather the deaths of more than 100,000 innocent human beings, the displacement of millions more, and the destruction of a country of 26 million people. Are those who supported that anarchic exercise in freedom, or at least those responsible for its execution, are they also criminals that should be put in jail? Run, Julian, run. You now have the capitalists on your ass. There are so many, we were talking about this the other night, the absolute failure on the part of American media to state the obvious about this, that what is being released is page after page, memo after memo, that demonstrates clearly for anyone who wants to see it the criminality, at worst incompetence at best, of the U.S. State Department. And anyone who wants to know how and why we get into these situations where hundreds of thousands of people have to die, some of whom are ours and some of whom belong to other countries, all that's required to see that in its full flower is to read as much of these releases as you can. For example, I got this today. Cozying up to power as usual, U.S. mainstream media blathers on about the damage to U.S. interests caused by the latest WikiLeaks document dump. But by U.S. interests, of course, they mean the interest of the unholy U.S. government, military, corporate cabal, which is squandering American lives and treasure in endless wars to dominate the world, not the interests of the American people. That's always the way it goes. It's the way it's been going for decades. our interests would be better served by the total collapse of this death machine. And like a lot of people, I hope the WikiLeaks disclosures brings that about sooner rather than later. I really do. I would like to see the United States wake up. And by the United States, I mean the people who determine foreign and domestic policy in this country. Wake up to the fact that the American century is a decade over. The Asian century is now rising in the East. And the best thing for the United States to do at this point would be to withdraw. Withdraw its forces, get the hell out of these 80 or 90 countries where we have military establishments, come home. I'm not talking about the Pat Buchanan Fortress America thing, but right now, damn close to that. You know what I'm saying? This country is dissolving like so much snotty wet tissue paper thrown in a commode right before our eyes. I mean, it can be stopped. This is a part that is so frustrating to a democratic socialist like moi. It can be stopped. The process of stopping this destruction of the United States can begin tomorrow. The process can begin tomorrow with, first of all, a decision to get the hell out of everybody else's country, to come home and put millions of people to work, legitimate work, rebuilding the infrastructure of this country that desperately needs it, building new industries, so-called green industries, high-tech industries, retraining people, and while they're being retrained, put millions of people to work rebuilding the infrastructure of the country, like I just said. Getting rid of every single Republican, and I think the masses of Americans would do that. I think once we understood what the Republicans have done, there would be lynching parties all over the country. And you can take that figuratively or literally. I really don't care. Me? I would take it literally. I think these traitors in this country, Julian Assange, first of all, he's not an American, but he's not a traitor. He's trying to show truth where no one wants to see it. But the traitors in this country, there are several hundred of them clustered together in the Capitol building in Washington. We'll be right back.
Free zone.
21 past the hour. Interesting coverage about WikiLeaks from sources that are not controlled by capitalist America. Cablegate.wikileaks.org has a statement from WikiLeaks. It says the cables show the extent of U.S. spying on its allies and the U.N. turning a blind eye to corruption and human rights abuse in so-called client states, backroom deals with supposedly neutral countries, lobbying for U.S. corporations, and the measures U.S. diplomats take to advance those who have access to them. This document release reveals the contradictions between the U.S.'s public persona and what it says behind closed door, and shows that if citizens in a democracy want their governments to reflect their wishes, they should ask to see what's going on behind the scenes. Well, yeah, but that's not how the United States government operates. It hasn't operated that way, if ever, but certainly not for the past 110 years. We don't do that. Our government does not reflect the wishes of the people. It reflects the wishes of capitalist America, corporate America, and a very narrow slice of that. from documents.newyorktimes.com, letters between WikiLeaks and the U.S. government. Assange wrote to the State Department at one point about their concern about the release of these documents. I guess this is Assange. He wrote, "The supposed risks are entirely fanciful, and you are instead concerned to suppress evidence of human rights abuse and other criminal behavior," end quote. When you speak truth to the kind of power that exists in this country, you run a very high risk of being murdered. You just do. From The Guardian, Simon Jenkins of The Guardian of the UK, he writes, quote, "The job of the media is not to protect power from embarrassment. If American spies are breaking United Nations rules by seeking the DNA biometrics of the UN Director General, he is entitled to hear about it. British voters should know what Afghan leaders thought of British troops. American and British taxpayers might question, too, how most of the billions of dollars going in aid to Afghanistan simply exits the country at Kabul Airport." That's Simon Jenkins writing in The Guardian. But capitalism, whether it's UK or US or Chinese or Indian, or it you know, capitalism is capitalism is capitalism. It does not want the truth out, ever. Capitalism's whole structure is based on lies, deception, misinformation, disinformation. Look at this big blob of human waste, Rush Limbaugh. That's why he makes as much money as he does. He is paid well by capitalist/corporate America to keep the lies and the filth and the crud coming, a steady torrent. And not just Limbaugh, but the other pigs who operate out of the same sty as he does. That's what they're paid to do. Because capitalism cannot exist with the truth. It just can't. Because the truth of capitalism is that human work, human enterprise, is its most disposable aspect. And it will dispose of it. It will get rid of human beings, either through attrition, from human beings dying, from being worked to death, i.e. slaves, through wars, i.e. the 50 million that died on this planet in the 40s. Capitalism demands death. It can't operate without it. It's a horrible system. And Julian Assange and the WikiLeaks thing is causing a target to be drawn on his back. And eventually one of these people is going to pull the trigger. Also from The Guardian of the UK, the headline, U.S. diplomat spied on UN leader. The Guardian says Washington is running a secret intelligence campaign targeted at the leadership of the United Nations, including the Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and the Permanent Security Council representatives from China, Russia, France, and the UK. From Der Spiegel, the German paper that got the documents, from A Superpower's View of the World, quote, "It is nothing short of a political meltdown for U.S. foreign policy. In the major crisis regions, an image emerges of a superpower that can no longer truly be certain of its allies." If this hastens the destruction of the national security state that we have become and hastens the replacement of the national security state with government of, by, and for the people, in other words, democratic socialism, I say, bring it on. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, and this hour is sponsored by Andrew Smith, who writes, thanks for keeping us in reality, Mike. Do you think the GOP may need to plan a field trip to the desert? Another example that I just received of Republicans' determination to murder this country, and I'll tell you, at some point, middle class, or formerly middle class or working class Americans are going to respond. I don't know. I've been talking about a tipping point for 3 or 4 years now. I don't know what it's going to be. I really don't. But here's another block to add to one side of the teeter-totter that may result in a tipping point. This happened tonight. House Republicans have blocked legislation to feed school meals to thousands more hungry children. Republicans used a procedural maneuver this evening to try to amend the $4.5 billion bill, which would give more needy children the opportunity to eat free lunches at school and make those lunches healthier. First Lady Michelle Obama has lobbied for the bill as part of her Let's Move campaign to combat childhood obesity. House Democrats said the Republican amendment, which would have required background checks for child care workers, was an effort to kill the bill and delayed a final vote on the legislation rather than vote on the amendment. Because the nutrition bill in the House is identical to legislation passed by the Senate back in August, passage by the House would send it to the White House for Obama's signature. If the bill were amended, though, it would be sent back to the Senate, and there's little time left in this legislative session. Steny Hoyer, the House Majority Leader, said the House will hold separate votes on Thursday on the amendment and the bill. Now, Republicans say the nutrition bill is too costly, an example of government overreach. Isn't that what these murderous sons of bitches always say? That's what they're saying about unemployment, extension of unemployment benefits. It's what they say about everything. They are trying seriously to destroy the country. Are we going to let them? Representative John Klein, a Republican of Minnesota and the top Republican on the House Education and Labor Committee, said, quote, it's not about making our children healthy and active. This is about spending and the role of government and the size of government. It's a debate about whether we're listening to our constituents or not. Apparently, this son of a bitch's constituents are saying, let the little bastard starve to death. And the hoe from Wasilla, Sarah Palin, also has taken a swipe at Michelle Obama's campaign. Remember when she brought cookies to a speech at a Pennsylvania church-sponsored school last month, calling the campaign a school cookie ban debate and the nanny state run amok on her Twitter feed? Remember that? Now, the legislation would give the government the power to decide what kind of food could be sold and what ingredients may be limited in school lunch lines and vending machines. The Agriculture Department would create the standards, which would likely keep popular foods like hamburgers and pizza in school cafeterias, but make them healthier, using leaner meat or whole wheat crust for the pieces, for example. Vending machines could be stocked with less candy and fewer high-calorie drinks, but no. The Republicans say no. The bill would also provide money to serve more than 20 million additional after-school meals annually to children in all 50 states. Many of those children now only receive after-school snacks. It would also increase the number of children eligible for school meals programs by at least 115,000 using Medicaid and census data to identify these kids. The legislation would increase the amount of money schools are reimbursed by 6 cents a meal. It's a priority for schools that say they don't have the dollars to feed needy kids. 6 cents a meal. And the Republicans say no. Let them starve. I'm just wondering, like I always do, how long before Republicans are dragged into the street and beaten senseless? I wonder how long it's going to be until that starts to happen. Surely, it is beginning to cross the minds of the millions of Americans on whom the Republican Party is urinating and has been for the past 2 years. Now, granted, with the media machine in this country, the number one aspect of the media machine being Rupert Murdoch's anti-American terrorist operation, but with Limbaugh thrown into the mix, and with the saturation across the country of right-wing neo-fascist broadcasting, it was very easy to convince Americans, apparently, at least the ones who voted, that Barack Obama is a Muslim socialist from Kenya and must be stopped. But the reality is, the Republicans couldn't care if Barack Obama were a tree stump. He's just the person that they're convincing the brain-dead voters to focus on. What the Republicans are doing is systematically destroying the country. Now, when you talk about that in abstract terms, you know, here's what you get.
Really? Oh, well, I don't know. Yeah, I get you.
But when you bring it down to terms that the average middle class, formerly middle class Republican or working class Republican, you know, the Reagan Democrats are in there too. When you bring it down to a level they can understand, which would be, for example, deciding that 6 cents per child increase per meal for a school lunch program that is desperately needed, and that improving the diets of children so that 25 years from now, 30 years from now, they don't develop diabetes, heart disease, and various kinds of cancers. When the average Republican, formerly middle class or working class, realizes that the Democrat or the Republican members of Congress are trying to kill their children, trying to kill their chances of recovering from this Republican-developed recession, depression. When that starts to sink in, then perhaps a real cleaning out of Congress will occur. It has nothing to do with voting. It has to do with seeking the terrorists out, the people who are destroying the country, the real people who are destroying the country. And it's not a bunch of people living in caves in Afghanistan, trust me, or Pakistan. It's mostly white males living temporarily in Washington, D.C., where they are trying to destroy the United States permanently. If enough people figure out the scam, and I think eventually people will, I hope it's not too late, then Republicans will not be voted out of office, they will be beaten out of office. They will be dragged from their offices kicking and screaming, I would imagine. I mean, what would you do? If there's a pile of food over here and a job over here and you have some fat ass white man, Republican, standing between you and being able to feed your children and get a job, and this fat ass white man is saying, "No, I have to take care of the rich." What would you do if your child starts to lose weight and starts to die? What are you going to do? Mr. or Miss Working Class, formerly Middle Class American, what are you going to do? Are you going to stand there in this hypothetical world? Are you going to stand there and just say, well, you know what? That Republican standing there preventing me and my family from living, he's absolutely right. We're too far in debt, so my kid is going to have to starve to death. and my spouse is going to have to die because I can't get health insurance, and I am going to have to move into my car because I can't get a job. All of this because the Republican fat white guy is standing there telling me, well, we're sorry, but, you know, we have a big federal deficit here, and besides, I am owned outright by the ownership class in this country, corporate capitalist America, so I'm sorry. So you tell me, truth seeker, at what point does that man or woman who has no job but does have a hungry child, does have a sick spouse and no health insurance, at what point will that American pick up a gun and decide this is enough? At what point? Huh? I mean, these militia bastards can run around the woods for the past 20 years about, oh, Bill Clinton, oh, Barack Obama. But what's going to happen when the dumbass militia types can't get food for their children, can't get medical care for a sick spouse, and can't get a job? And finally realize who's doing this to them. It's not the Kenyan Muslim in the White House. It's the white, fat-ass Republicans in the House and the Senate. At what point do those people say enough and drag Republicans into the street and kill them? That's a very disconcerting thought, isn't it?
Brings them to their knees. He patrols the highways from the air. He keeps the country safe.
Ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, and again this hour is sponsored by Andrew Smith, who writes, thanks for keeping us in reality, Mike. Do you think the GOP may need to plan a field trip to the desert? I think eventually people are going to realize what the Republicans in the legislative branch of this government and what the Republicans in that branch and the executive branch during the eight-year reign of terror that was the Bush crime family, what they have done to this country. And I think there's going to be a reaction. I'm not exactly sure what the reaction would be, but being a parent, as I am, and being a person who likes freedom, who such as it is, and my freedom is the freedom from corporate America. I don't deal with these filthy bastards at all. My freedom actually is from capitalism, too. There is nothing capitalist about our small business here. It is entrepreneurial. It is something that Kathy and I put together, and it is sustained by people who feel that the program is worth sustaining, and by a bit of advertising, all of which we can decline. If we get advertising that we find offensive, we just say no. That's just how we're set up. But if I were part of it, I have been many times in my life until I finally realized that they were murdering me. If I were part of capitalist America or corporate America, you know, a good little worker, as so many Americans have found out, that capitalism doesn't care about the worker, only insofar as it can exploit the worker. I mean, we've got cities in what is now referred to disgustingly by corporate media as the Rust Belt. We have cities that have been opened up like a gutted pig and allowed to bleed to death because capitalism wanted more profit and decided to move their operations where labor was cheaper. I don't know why there has not been a violent revolution in this country already. I really don't. I don't quite get it, except somehow media factors in here. Just like media, such as it was factored into the Nazi takeover of an otherwise creative, talented, artistic population in Germany in the 20s and 30s. But stealing jobs and exporting the industrial base in this country, while horrific for the working class and middle class, is bad enough. Telling those people now that the jobs are gone, that you are not going to get any more unemployment compensation because we need the money to give to rich people. See, remember, the Republicans keep saying they can't do the $18 billion for an extension of unemployment benefits because it's not funded. But the $700 billion tax break to the millionaires and billionaires in this country that they're insisting on is also not funded. And it is the job of filthy, disgusting people like Limbaugh and Beck and Hannity and the rest of these vermin to confuse the issue, to not let the average American understand that. The average American who is so brain dead as to listen to Rupert Murdoch's anti-American terrorist media organization day in and day out. Do you not understand, right winger who's listening to this program, that they want you dead? What does it take to get that through to you? What does it take? They want you dead in the sense of any ambition or desire or inclination toward self-government. They want you, if you're going to work, you are going to work for $6 an hour, and you're going to shut your goddamn mouth and be happy you have that. Don't you get it yet? Oh, my God. So I'm just wondering, since we've not had a workers' revolution or rebellion in this country since the 30s. What is it going to take for the formerly middle class and the working class to see that their children are being denied health care? Meals at a time when maybe the formerly middle class or working class family can't afford to feed their own children. The Republicans want to end food stamps. They want to end, like Clinton did, welfare as we know it. There's still a little bit of welfare left, and the Republicans want to take it all away. And unemployment compensation, unemployment insurance, all of it. Take it all away. So you, you miserable son of a bitch, will do exactly what they say. How long are we going to deal with this before there is violence in this country on a scale that will shock the Europeans, where they have violence in the streets every time a government over there tries to add a penny surtax onto something? The workers in Germany or France or even the UK, Spain, Portugal, wherever, Greece, Italy, it doesn't make any difference. The workers react. The workers in this country allow themselves to continue to be violated, beaten, kicked, treated like dogs. So at what point? This question worries me. Because I certainly do not want to see violence on that scale in this country. I don't want to see it. Because there will be blood, and there will be an enormous amount of it. But when the American people finally do wake up, do you really think they're going to blame the Kenyan in the White House? Or are they going to put the responsibility where it belongs, on these Republican vermin? I'll be back. Stick around. More on the WikiLeaks thing. And Harmid Karzai. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. You know, something occurred to me. I haven't gotten another roiling mass of poorly written hate mail in a long time from the right-wing trolls that respond when the neo-fascist bloggers tell them, well, look what Malloy did! What's the matter with you right-wingers? Am I not showing up on your radar anymore? Come on, you stupid, slimy little punks. Do something. Put something out there that says what a creep I am so we have some comedic material here at the Malloy Program. Just thought I'd mention that. Never mind. Now, regarding WikiLeaks, again, I want to get back to this. Not that we have focused that much attention on it, but with the Republicans shutting down the government, and we're very close to that. The WikiLeaks thing has sort of taken, if not a back seat, certainly a seat in the middle of the bus, and a little bit hard to attach to this, the importance of what this massive document release really is, the importance of all this. So I want to go back to a little bit. One of the memos released, secret U.S. diplomatic memo. This one was written by Frank Ricciardone, Deputy U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan. Frank Ricciardone, whatever. R-I-C-C-I-A-R-D-O-N-E. I should know that because I'm Italian, but I can't pronounce it. So anyway, Frank. There's a document written by Frank, Deputy U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan. And it explains or it talks about how our little puppet bastard there, Hamid Karzai, the former, I don't know, what do you want to call him, a lobbyist, a consultant, something for Unocal Oil Company before he was appointed president.
But, Mike, they had an election.
Before he was appointed president of Afghanistan by the CIA, Hamid Karzai, our dorky little puppet with the funny hat, frees drug dealers if they're connected to powerful figures in his government and people that are considered by the United States. You take this with much as many grains of salt as you want to. People considered by our crack CIA to be, if not active, certainly incipient terrorists. Hamid Karzai just lets everybody go if they're connected. The memo, which includes more allegations of corruptions. How many allegations of corruption does one government need? Well, when it's in Afghanistan, infinite supply. Afghanistan can absorb anything the so-called West can throw its way. Corruption? Piece of cake. Wars? We will absorb your armies. Conquest? Come and try. Domination? So Hamid Karzai, according to the memo, since 2007... Oh, and his attorney general, attorney general of Afghanistan? What do you suppose he does? Huh? The attorney general. Okay. Anyway, Hamid and his attorney general have authorized the release of 150 detainees, including, sit down, including the worst of the worst. People, according to Dick Cheney and the other members of the Bush crime family, that as soon as they were released, they would start eating Christian babies by the handfuls. In other words, 29 former prisoners held in Guantanamo. Hamid Karzai has released them. 29. But wait a minute. I thought Eric Cantor and John Boehner and the rest of the right wingers have insisted that if these people were released, all hell would break loose. The Republic, I'm sorry, the fascist state of America would collapse. Apparently, that's a memo that Hamid Karzai didn't get, because he just releases people. What? You were charged with what? You were a terrorist? You were tortured? Never mind. Here's your pardon. Goodbye. Go in peace. Assalamu alaikum, or whatever. Go. Goodbye. Assalamu alaikum. What? You were a drug dealer? You were caught with how many kilos? 124 kilos of heroin? Oh, no problem. The document was written on August 6, 2009 by Frank, and it says, quote, both Hamid and his attorney general authorized the release of detainees pre-trial. and allow dangerous individuals to go free or re-enter the battlefield without ever facing an Afghan court. The memo continued, despite our complaints and expressions of concern to the Afghan government, the releases continue. Now, Associated Press says that Karzai's spokesman, Waheed Omar, did not immediately respond to a request for comment about this. Now, I mean, what's Waheed going to say? What is Waheed going to say? Yeah, we do that. Or, no, we don't do that. We already know they do it. So what's the point asking, right? The memo said that in April 2009, Karzai pardoned five Afghan policemen caught with 273 pounds of heroin. Right, Afghan policemen. Maybe you've seen some of the videos on CNN or MSNBC about our military trying to train Afghan policemen. The first thing they have to teach them is, now look, pay attention. You see this? That's two. See, I've got two fingers up. Now, you see these two over here? That's two. Now, let's add them. Add. That means you combine them. Combine. Okay, just repeat after me. 2 + 2 = 4. You can't do that? That's a little bit too hard? Okay, well, let me show you how to use high-powered multiple barreled killer weapon here. Afghan police. An Afghan policeman caught with 273 pounds of heroin were released because they were related to two heroic figures of the Afghan civil war fought in the mid-1990s. You got that? They were related. Now, the fact is, everybody in Afghanistan is related one way or another. I mean, you can go any place in the country and find one of Hamid Karzai's 42nd cousins on his wife's side 10 times removed. Everybody is related in Afghanistan. So you see what kind of justice is meted out there, right? Okay. All right. Where are we? According to the document, Karzai also interviewed in the narcotics case of Haji Amanullah, the son of a wealthy businessman and one of the president's supporters. Oh, well, that's not family. Richard, or Frank, our deputy U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan with the Italian name I can't pronounce, he wrote, quote, without any constitutional authority, Karzai ordered the police to conduct a second investigation, which resulted in the conclusion that the defendant had been framed. Well, of course. If the first investigation doesn't produce the results you want in Afghanistan, and sometimes in Chicago, too, if you don't get the results you want, then you bring in the investigators and say, these are not the results I want. Get me the results I want. Do another investigation. Aye, sir. And off the police go. Frank, our deputy U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan with the Italian last name I can't seem to pronounce, he also wrote that intelligence reports indicated Hamid was also planning to release somebody named Ismail Safad, a drug trafficker sentenced to 19 years in jail. Safad was a priority target for the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency, who was arrested in 2005 with large quantities of heroin and weapons. So WikiLeaks releases are not just about the duplicity, lies, chicanery, nonsense, bullcrap, provocative actions on the part of our degenerate, sick, corporate-owned, capitalist-managed diplomatic corps. That was a long sentence. But also points out the corruption of the people we install to run something called Afghanistan, which is no more of a country than, DeKalb County, Georgia is. But we all play along, don't we? In the meantime, how many Americans continue to die there? Oh, never mind. More when we come back.
Perfectly comfortable, all has been done. Gaze at your daughter.
truth. It's More Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. So we're talking about WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. Boy, they understand now. Interpol's looking for him. What is coming up next? And I'll get into this eventually. Bank of America is WikiLeaks' next target. The banking system, the whole. Julian Assange is certainly doing the Lord's work, isn't he? I mean, here's a guy who is bound and determined to insist before they kill him, and they will kill him. He will be made dead fairly quickly, because now he's going to take. It's one thing to take on the corrupt practices of governments. That is not necessarily anything that the average Jane or Joe on the street doesn't assume anyway. But the corrupt practices of the international capitalist system? No. So Julian Assange is a dead man walking, I believe is the expression. Let us hope that before he is murdered, that he is able to get out the information about the banking system, the capitalist system, and how filthy and corrupt and destructive it is. So that maybe that same average Joe and Jane that says, yeah, government's corrupt, all more, will also then come to realize that capitalism is corrupt, always has been, always will be, and that capitalism is eating Joe and Jane's lives alive, so to speak. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Now, we have been hearing, as we heard the last two times, that these releases by WikiLeaks is going to cause the streets to run red with the blood of innocent Americans, soldiers, diplomats, civilians. And I realize what you're thinking right now. Innocent and American don't really work in the same sentence on that level. But let's just stipulate that we're going to use that term. Innocent Americans, the streets, the gutters, everything will run red with rivulets of blood from innocent Americans or innocent Afghans or innocent Iraqis or innocent fill in the blank because of the release of these. Well, American officials concede now, including Pentagon officials, that they have no evidence to date that the documents have led to anyone's death, ever, at all. But this myth, you see, persists. Go ahead, stop somebody on the street. Go ahead, I'll wait. Okay, now ask that person, do you think the release of these documents is causing people to die? And see what if they understand what you're talking about, they may look at you and say, what documents? Was there a document on Dancing with the Stars last night? What are you talking about? If they understand what you mean, their answer will be, yeah, oh my God, everybody, the streets are running red. Rivulets of blood of innocent American soldiers, diplomats, and civilians. Especially if they have been watching Rupert Murdoch's terrorist broadcast network, the one financed in part by the same people who financed the extreme right-wing Islamic madrasas that produce terrorists who come and kill Americans. Maybe the killing is justified. That's up to you to decide. But the same money that finances those madrasas is money that goes into the Fox terror network owned by Rupert Murdoch. Oh, but I digress. Nobody is dying. Nobody is being tortured as a result of the release of these documents. We do the dying, or the killing. We do the torturing, not them. They don't have the right facilities. Oh, they may catch somebody from a foreign news reporting organization and relieve him of his head. But Jesus God, I mean, ask Jan Brewer, the governor of New Mexico, the governor of Arizona. That goes on down in the deserts near the Mexican border all the time. Head lopping? Head lopping is very typical. It goes on all over the world. The deserts are littered with them down there in Arizona. Ask the governor, the crazy one. So nobody's dying, not as a result of these leaks. People are dying as a result of the fact that Mexico has become a narco state. But nobody is dying. Before the release of these documents last Sunday, news organizations given access to the documents. And working in conjunction with WikiLeaks, everybody sat down and took the greatest care to ensure that no one would be put in danger. See, this is the part they leave out. In statements accompanying stories about the documents, several newspapers said they voluntarily withheld information. And here it comes. And that they cooperated with the State Department and the Obama administration to ensure nothing released could endanger lives or national security. Do you understand that? This was not a rogue operation. The U.S. State Department and the Obama administration. Oh, maybe they felt like they had a metaphorical gun to their head. And they had no choice. But they sat down with the newspapers that were going to release these documents and apparently representatives from WikiLeaks. And they went over everything and redacted the things that need to be redacted. So now that everybody in the U.S. government and different governments say, that is a bunch of nonsense. You see, that's how it works in a capitalist society. Everybody works out the details, and then the capitalists pretend like, oh, we are shocked.
Can you hear that? Time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. So the truth is occasionally surfaces when you get information from the Pentagon. Seldom, granted, but occasionally it does. And the truth is coming out that nobody has been harmed in any of these document dumps performed by WikiLeaks. The newspapers that releases this stuff, according to McClatchy, the newspapers, quote, established lists in common of people to protect, notably in countries ruled by dictators, controlled by criminals, or at war, end quote. That's according to an account by Le Monde, the French newspaper that was among the news organizations that was given access to the documents. Le Monde went on to say, quote, all the identities of people the journalists believe would be threatened were redacted, end quote. And it was an unusual act of self-censorship by journalists toward government documents, indeed. But as your grandma used to say, the proof is in the pudding. All these claims by these half-witted, most of them, jackass American politicians now, who are part and parcel of this horrific corruption, all standing in the House and the Senate or wherever their cameras, screeching and screaming about the innocent Americans that are going to die, or innocent civilians that are going to die because of the release of these documents, which is madness, which is a total inversion of the truth. The actions reported by these documents have caused the deaths of hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of innocent people. The actions reported on, not the release of the documents. But we live in the reverse world where I'm rubber, you're glue. Anything you say bounces off of me and sticks to you. That's where we all live. McClatchy goes on to say, unlike the release earlier this year of intelligence documents about the war in Afghanistan, when WikiLeaks posted on its website unredacted documents and included the names of Afghan informants, WikiLeaks agreed this time not to release More than a quarter million documents because they hadn't been vetted by the U.S. government. So every single document that has been released so far, all 250,000 of them, is that the exact number? Let me see. How many? I've got the number here. Hold on. Here it is. 251,287 diplomatic cables. So all quarter of a million of the documents thus far released by WikiLeaks have been vetted by the U.S. government. Now, again, you can make the claim, well, Mike, they had no choice. They had to participate in their own hanging. Really? You show me a government that willingly participates in its own hanging, and I'll show you a government run by Barack Obama? Ooh. The newspapers said that WikiLeaks had agreed to release only the documents used in preparation for articles that appeared in the five publications, which in addition to Le Monde and the New York Times included Great Britain's The Guardian, Germany's Der Spiegel, and Spain's newspaper El País, the country, the nation, whatever. Le Monde said in an editorial statement, quote, together the five newspapers have carefully edited the raw text used to remove all names and indices whose disclosures could pose risks to individuals. Pentagon spokesman, additionally, Jeff Morrell, has said previously there's no evidence that anyone has been killed because of any leaks. And just Sunday, another Pentagon official told McClatchy newspapers that the military still has no evidence that the leaks have led to any deaths. And, of course, this official didn't want to be named, according to McClatchy, because of the issue's sensitivity. It is very important to put out the false story. The false story is, oh, my God! People are going to die! People have already died. Identities will be blown! Identities already have been blown. When you take an 8-year-old child who's attending his auntie's wedding and he is blown, that means he was hit by a Predator missile because somebody in some secure bunker someplace in the United States looking at a video screen said, oh, look at that group of people. I think those are terrorists. Release the missile. Release the Hellfire missile. Kaboom. The Pentagon spokesman, Morrell, told the Washington Post a couple of months ago, last time there was a document dump, quote, we have yet to see any harm come to anyone in Afghanistan that we can tie to exposure in the WikiLeaks documents. Now, despite all of this, the U.S. government has maintained that the release of the documents would put people in grave danger. And in a letter to WikiLeaks last Saturday. A letter to WikiLeaks? They have a mail drop? Well, I'll be damned. The State Department's legal advisor, Harold Koh, said the release, quote, could place at risk the lives of countless innocent individuals, from journalists to human rights activists to bloggers to soldiers to individuals providing information to further peace and security, end quote. Can you handle that sentence like I can't without laughing? Harold Koh, the State Department's legal advisor, said the release could place at risk the lives of countless innocent individuals, from journalists to human rights activists and bloggers to soldiers. No disrespect to anyone who's ever served in anybody's military anywhere on earth, but soldiers are innocent individuals. Innocent by virtue of what? Soldiers can be a lot of things. They can be heroes. They can be iconic figures. They can be torturers. They can be liars. They can be unrestricted murderers because they are now wearing the uniform of a government, a military. But innocent? I don't think I've ever heard of soldiers referred to as being innocent. by their very nature. They come into someone else's country for two purposes and two purposes only, to break things up and to kill people. That is the nature of the military. It is not, as the Bush administration was so fond of saying, about nation building. It is about nation destroying. That is the nature of war. That is the definition of a soldier. So since when, Mr. Harold Coe, are soldiers lumped in with bloggers and described as innocent? My God. Mr. Harold Coe's memo, or letter, he is the State Department's legal advisor, went on to say, quote, despite your stated desire to protect those lives, you have done the opposite and endangered the lives of countless individuals. You have undermined your stated objective of disseminating this material widely without redaction and without regard to the security and sanctity of the lives your actions endanger, end quote. Have you ever heard more garbage newspeak in your life? This is something that Winston Smith would work on. This is something that the Ministry of Truth would put out, right? Huh? You WikiLeaks bastards! You filthy scum! You released our memos! Where we lie and cheat and steal and cover up and distort and undermine and pervert! And you have the audacity to say, WikiLeaks, that you're doing this in the interest of truth and justice? How dare you? How dare you? Boy, when we find you, you talk about torture. Oh, when we find you, Julian. We're going to take you apart piece by piece. And as McClatchy points out, one assumes without irony, it wasn't immediately clear how Sunday's release would endanger secret U.S. programs. Though it wasn't difficult to conclude that some of the releases could endanger political futures of various officials here and abroad. One cable, for example, describes a meeting between Petraeus and the commander of U.S. Central Command and Yemen's president, where they were discussing what was apparently a U.S. bombing campaign against al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. According to the cable, the president of Yemen, Ali Abdullah Saleh, began to, quote, joke that he had just lied by telling his parliament that the Yemeni forces were responsible for attacks carried out by the United States. And the cable quotes Saleh as saying, quote, we'll continue saying the bombs are ours, not yours, David. Oh, well. Releasing that kind of information? When we catch you, Julian, oh boy, are you going to get a case of terminal red ass. According to Huffington Post, former Arkansas governor and Christian fundamentalist and would-be Republican nominee for president has provided his assessment of what he believes to be an appropriate punishment for the source of the leak of U.S. Embassy cables by WikiLeaks. He said, quote, anything less than execution is too kind a penalty. Whoever in our government leaked that information is guilty of treason. They put American lives at risk. Amen. Huckabee continued, quote, they put relationships that will take decades to rebuild at risk. and they knew full well that they were handling sensitive documents. They were entrusted, and anyone who had access to that level of information was not only a person who understood what the rules were, but they also ignored under oath a commitment that they would not violate it. They did. And I believe they have committed treason against this country, and any lives they endanger, they're personally responsible for. And the blood is on their hands. And in addition to their reckless irresponsibility and act of criminal intent, I think the New York Times has shown an utter reckless disregard for any responsible journalism by printing something that they know that they obtained in a way that is not appropriate, end quote. Sieg Heil. Huckabee. Sarah Palin went to Facebook Monday and urged the Obama administration, you betcha, to call for a manhunt on WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange that would be carried out with what she calls the same urgency we pursue Al-Qaeda and Taliban leaders. Oh, Sarah, you're such a dumbass. So what does that mean? If you see a crowd on a video screen in downtown Melbourne, Australia, and some junior grade analyst looks at it and says, hey, I think that's Assange right there in the middle. All right, release the Hellfire missile. That's how we go after Taliban leaders and Al-Qaeda, Sarah. And Rick Santorum, former Pennsylvania senator and woman hater who likes to see his children play with dead fetuses, said yesterday that Assange was guilty of terrorism. He's guilty of terrorism and should be prosecuted as such. Oh, and by the way, the only person under arrest for all this, Bradley Manning, 23-year-old soldier, U.S. soldier, was being held in solitary confinement at a military prison in Quantico, Virginia. She has family in Wales. His mother is Welsh. I think his father is American. So, four members of Mr. Manning's family, including his mother, made the trip from Pembrokeshire in the U.K. to the U.S., to see her son. And a friend traveling with them said they hoped to see Bradley, but they were unable to do so because he is in a military prison. And the young soldier's family has been asked not to speak to the media about the case by his American father, Brian, a former member of the U.S. military. Mrs. Manning, mom, suffered a stroke 4 years ago. She met her former husband to discuss their son's welfare. This is all according to the Telegraph of the UK. The couple divorced in 2001. A spokesman at the U.S. base said he believed the family would have had the right to visit Mr. Manning and that only media visits were banned. By the same token, nobody would allow mom to go in. And of course, you remember, Bradley Manning was arrested back in May after WikiLeaks released footage of attacks by U.S. Apache helicopters, which killed a whole bunch of people in Iraq in 2007. You remember that video, right? And for releasing that video, or alleged to have released that video, this young soldier was immediately glommed up and disappeared. He was charged with transferring classified data and, quote, delivering national defense information to an unauthorized source, end quote, which could carry a maximum sentence of 52 years in prison. Delivering national defense information to an unauthorized source, national defense information, a videotape of murder, a videotape of murder in Iraq, of U.S. soldiers in an Apache helicopter circling, cutting people down, civilian people, reporters, almost murdering children. And because Bradley Manning released that, he has been charged with delivering national defense information. Look, if we want videos of our people committing murder, God damn it, we'll release them. Bradley Manning has no right. This son of a bitch is going to jail forever. So, Bradley Manning was born in Oklahoma, by the way, but he moved back to Wales with his mother. He enlisted in the Army in 2007 and was an intelligence analyst in Iraq. And now he is a prisoner in Virginia. And so it goes on and on and on and on. You release information that contains the truth about us, and we will nail your ass to a cross. And then laugh while the birds, bugs, and bees tear you to pieces. We'll have more about this on our next program. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.